anchor.fm.
Hey, WHFR listeners, I'm Lindsay, and I want to invite you to play in the waves with me every other Saturday here on the station Making Waves. From 6 to 8, children of all ages, this includes you, the young at heart, can tune in and get down to the fun sounds of playing in the waves. So come play with me every other Saturday from 6 to 8 on the station Making Waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Run with me, have a little fun with me, stay out late.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and welcome to our program that we feature every Tuesday from 1 to 2 o'clock, the WHFR Forum. This week, it's Dearborn Heights News and Views. Welcome to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program, part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs presented from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented live on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights and the surrounding areas. If you are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn Making Waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan, you can hear all of our archive forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the option Forum. Wait for the option to select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear by selecting the desired date. Now, to your host and director, Ned Apigian, who's also a Dearborn Heights console person for today's program.
Now to our guests today. We're very fortunate to have the police chiefs of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, Police Chief Ronald Haddad of Dearborn and Police Chief Lee Gavin of Dearborn Heights. Chiefs, welcome. You can't see my salute over there, but we got these badges on. I wish I should have wore a uniform today.
How you doing today, Ned?
Thank you. I'm fine, and you are all fine, I hope, and ready to tell us what the police chiefs in our two cities do. Well, first of all, in order to make this sensible, I thought that rather than talk to one, we'd talk to both in order to make some sort of comparison. Sometimes the comparisons aren't exactly fair because Dearborn is slightly larger. The population is roughly, Chief Haddad, we said
98,153 was our official census.
And ours, I believe, turned out to be 57,000 something. Well, I think we only lost 500 families. I didn't think we lost 500 families. I think we gained more immigrants in our two cities where the other cities probably didn't have. But in any event, we're talking about two communities that are almost double in size, so the comparisons aren't going to be too fair, but gives you an idea. So I'll ask each one of you, what do you have in terms of your budget? Do you know what your city budget is in Dearborn, Chief?
Well, I know that this past year the city budget dropped from $106 million to $88 million. I know our police budget respectively dropped equally from $36 million to $29.5 million.
So, okay, that's a
so there's a sizable reduction in the budget that the city has available to run their business.
So that's a great comparison. We're talking about your police budget is about half of the budget. What did you say your police budget?
It's approximately 33%.
A third, my God.
Of the city's budget is for police service. So, you know, and that's a responsibility we take very seriously because we realize that the people of Dearborn pay a very expensive fee for their public safety.
Okay, well, if we make this analysis, the budget in Dearborn is about $38 million. It's almost a little bit less than half of the $80 million that you're talking about. It's pretty close. And Chief Gavin, what's our police budget in Dearborn Heights?
Our police budget in Dearborn Heights is $12 million, Ned.
Okay.
So equivalent, like Chief Haddad says, we're about one-third of the total city budget.
Well, that's something I did not realize. We're talking about, in both cases, about a third. So the comparison is pretty good. Although the rumor is to me that I've heard that in Dearborn, your requirements for staffing by charter is required to have a certain amount of officers, which we don't have in Dearborn Heights.
No, we don't.
We don't have that. So
right. In Dearborn, the voters have passed charter amendment that requires us to have on a per capita basis 205 officers sworn, and that's in addition to approximately 55 other people that do staff and support services such as our dispatchers, our animal control, enforcement, traffic, you know, parking enforcement.
Yeah.
And the like. So that's 205 sworn officers.
That's the point I want to make with Chief Gavin. What's their distinction? We're nowhere near that size, right?
No, our department size is 81.
81.
From the chief on down,
and
we have 81 supervisors and patrol officers total in the department.
And how about the ancillary people he was talking about?
In the budget last year.
No, in terms of numbers.
Numbers.
He identified about 50 people.
205
total.
Plus 50.
So we're talking about 80. What are your extra?
We're about 112 counting our non-sworn personnel.
Non-sworn.
Dispatchers, our animal control, our clerks.
So how does that work out? Are we pretty close there too as well? Unfortunately, not writing these numbers down because one comes up before the other.
Dearborn's a lot bigger than us.
Yes, that's what I mean. If your number was
112,
and his number was 250, it's pretty close.
So,
considering their charter thing, I'm sure if they didn't have that charter, they'd be 30, 40 people less, probably. One way or another, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Per capita in Dearborn Heights, is that actually more than their per capita?
If you look at the populations about half, Jay, I would say if you kept looking at it at half, you're pretty close.
We're about the same, you know, average-wise. Like you said a little earlier, Dearborn's a lot bigger than us. With their ordinance, their charter, they have more patrol officers naturally than us.
This is another thing. Dearborn might be twice the size population-wise, but in area, do you think it's twice the size?
Well, Dearborn Heights is 12.5 square miles.
Dearborn is 26 square miles.
About half again, except we have that strange shape, which probably causes a little bit of a nightmare, I would think.
Yeah, the way our city is designed, but we've always been called the little sister city of Dearborn there. Dearborn Heights.
Those of you who are paying attention to the news, and we're talking about joining facilities and sharing things. I know a couple times before when I was a candidate and people asked, what do you think needs to be done? And I have said, looked at the situation in Toronto. I called it municipal government, or it's more like regional government. This doesn't make any sense at all, what we do. And if you listen to Mr. Snyder, I was in Architects Legislative Day in Lansing 2 weeks ago when the demonstrations were, and they had their main economist making a presentation to the architects and engineers, and apparently Mr. Snyder thinks we have too many townships, too many forms of government that need to be consolidated. If you go from down Ford Road from Wyoming, if that was the Detroit line and went all the way to Canton, that's about 10 or 12 miles, you run across eight different communities, I think, is what the count was. Each one with its own fire department, each one with a police department. And most of them are what I would call almost bedroom communities, and some sense has to be made out of that. We don't know how that's going to work its way out. But you answered a couple interesting questions, which I was hoping to get to without having to ask the question, that we're really, you know, our ancillary people to get an idea. Now, there's something most people don't know. What does a policeman do that we don't know about? Now, we know we see the lights stopping, giving somebody a ticket. The light doesn't work, and they're directing traffic. Other than that, it's pretty much of a mystery. How much time do you guys spend in court when people are challenging tickets? That's a lot of time, a lot of effort.
You know, the more crime we proactively fight, the more arrests we make, the more the officers we have to spend in court. You know, right now, unfortunately, the economy is such where larceny crimes and property crimes are escalating all over the country, not just in Dearborn Heights or Dearborn. And for us to preempt those kind of things, we have to do traffic stops. We have to make sure that we are on top of our respective crime patterns. And so it is a double-edged sword. The more people you end up stopping, arresting, the more the officer has to go to court, and it becomes more costly. Right down to prisoner food. You know, we're way over our budget in prisoner food right now, for example. You know, we're probably going to be $100,000 on our prisoner process.
I noticed that in our budget, too, so, looking at the amount of money we spend on that.
And, you know, I mean, in particular during hard economic times, and I'm sure that Chief Gavin feels the same, we have to maintain a safe environment so that when we come out of this, our cities are still attractive for people to raise children in, to work in, to come and spend their money at the shopping malls, at their eating, and you know, their entertainment destinations. So crime really is a double whammy in hard economic times, because once we come out of this, people will decide either this is still a safe place to be or we're going to spend our money elsewhere. And based on our census currently and the fact that 350 businesses last year were reoccupied from vacancies to taking back over, I think there's a lot of strong indications that people still believe in our region and in our cities. I know there's a lot of growth in Dearborn Heights.
Well, and actually, with the census, Dearborn and Dearborn Heights didn't do that bad, as we mentioned. Chief Gavin, do you see an increase in arrests and based on the economy in the last couple of years than the last couple?
Sure, naturally, Ned. Crime has increased in our area. In fact, all over, Chief Hadhead would agree. I'm all over Southeast Michigan with the economy being the way it is. There's a lot more crime, a lot more theft, the retail frauds, we call it. Our Home Depots, our Targets, a lot more shoplifting.
Oh.
Naturally, during the holiday season is when you see the large increase, and we were very busy during the holiday season. People are stressed. They don't have the finances to support their family, their children, so they resort to stealing and those type of crimes. Breaking into cars.
Into homes.
Homes, you know, we're not too bad here in Dearborn Heights with the homes. We work in close conjunction with Dearborn, and if we seem to find a pattern of home residential B&Es, then we'll work with the Dearborn officers. Maybe our plainclothes crews and their crews get together, and we've worked together and come up with some arrests. What we're seeing a lot now are the GPSs out of people's vehicles. In the driveways of the homes, in the streets, in the parking lots.
What do they have in their cars? People are showing what's in the car.
Well, it's the GPS unit.
Oh, I have one, and somebody told me to keep it out of sight.
Right, exactly. In the sight. They're breaking the window. They're getting in.
I keep mine in my glove box. When I ran across it the other day, and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. So we have a large amount of crime like that.
Well, I get Corporal Perinello's reports on email to me because I'm on my homeowners association board of directors, and he's always making a listing of where certain break-ins or these kind of events are happening pretty much after the fact, or alerting us that there's this kind of car driving around. I'm sure you have the same thing in Dearborn, Chief.
Very much so. And I want to echo what Chief Gavin said. You know, if your listeners would just be a little proactive, not leave any valuables in plain sight in their cars, and look out for people that might look like they're not heading anywhere, just hanging around, and report them to the security. We can't say that enough. You know, sometimes they go into a parking lot and hit 10 or 12 cars. Many of them are not even locked, and they take purses, they take electronic devices, computers. Sometimes they leave their iPods on the phone, and all the high technology that the younger generation knows far more about than I do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we have, and they tend to be underinsured, so it's a loss to the owner most of the time. You know, there's high deductibles, so if they're just a little bit more mindful and conscious about not leaving those items in plain view, not even for a minute, whether it's sunny or cold out, you know, lock their cars and secure it. It just makes the whole area a lot safer, and we should all look out for one another.
There's another thing that I noticed, that my wife has a new car, and the doors would unlock or would lock only when you put the car in gear or something, or you had to drive. And she said, I don't like that. I like to get in my car and lock the door. I want to make sure it's locked. And when I shut the car off, I don't want my doors opening up automatically. Those are things that people need to take into consideration. Look around, see where you're going.
Right.
But anyway.
What I'd like to do, Ned, is echo Chief had it on in regards to, you know, people keeping their cars locked and the increase in theft. But what we have to remind the citizens out there of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights is we can't do it all ourselves. We need them to be the eyes and ears. We need them when they see someone suspicious in the area, someone that doesn't look right, to call us. We can't be everywhere at all the time. So we need the help of the community. Like you said earlier, we have a little, Corporal Perinello with our Crime Prevention Bureau puts out a little crime sheet every day, every couple days, letting the black captains of neighborhood groups know some of the activity. And I know in Dearborn they have a system, it's a NICSOL system, and it's somewhat the same where they put out emails or updates as to maybe some crime trends. But it's important that the residents of both of our communities get in contact with us when they, you know, see someone suspicious in the area.
Well, we've reached the one-quarter point, and it's time for us to do You Are Listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month as a part of WHFR's forum talk show format, right here on WHFR at 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn. Now back to our guests, Police Chief Ronald Haddad of Dearborn and Police Chief Lee Gavin of Dearborn Heights.
I'd like to request that we just let Police Chief Haddad just follow up on NICSOL.com, since it was mentioned.
Right.
I get those reports on my phone.
That's excellent. You know, they can go to our city website or NICSOL.com and they can sign up immediately. It's very simple, and you either get text messages or you get them by way of email. We had a chlorine spill at Fortson High School a few weeks back, and many of the parents had just dropped off the children, and although we hit the airwaves and went public with it and our cable networks, many of the parents didn't get the information until we sent the NICSOL out to them. So it can be anything from a police situation, a closed road, or a crime pattern, or just a reminder not to fall for a Hollywood scheme, if you will, you know, during the holidays, or any of those kind of things. Anything that we can make the community safer. And in Dearborn, you
is
may
an email alert? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's email or text. And in Dearborn, you have to use the 48126 zip code. You don't put, there's four different zip codes, but the one to make sure that you get the precise information for the entire city is 48126. Sometimes people will put their own zip code on there, and it might distort some of the information, or they might have a bleed through from Inkster or some of the other cities, and that's not a bad thing, but 48126 is the one that they should log on with.
Let's make sure that they understand. Nixle is spelled NIXLE.com. So they just can go to the website and register there. And they have a choice, in fact, I believe, because I get it on my phone, but also from my email address. So
and two things that the viewers need to know. It's absolutely free. The service is free. And the police do not know who signed up. We just know that we have currently some 2,500 or more subscribers, but we do not know the people. Sometimes people are nervous about their phones being monitored and that kind of thing. And although that could happen, it won't happen through this system here. And it's a very secured system. It's a national program, and I like the free word. And most people, when they first got involved with it, were kind of skeptical, but now I get we need more information. You know, it's been 2 days since we heard from you, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a good program, and it gives us an extra way to reach out to the community.
We don't have anything like that, do we, Chief? I mean, I get my email from Corporal Perinello because I'm on his list.
Right, our program is similar to that. We don't have the Nixle, but we have Corporal Perinello who passes out those.
How can we get that Nixle?
It's something that we could look at with the city. I've discussed it with Officer Perinello. He likes it this way because he can kind of put out what he wants and modify it. I'm not all that familiar with the Nixle system as to who passes out the information, but it's something that naturally we'll look at in depth.
Yeah, well, it's a lot different if you can pick it up on your iPhone or your your computer where it's at. I have to open up my computer, and then I see I have a message from him. And based on all the other ones, I decide, do I need to read that one first?
There is an issue, and my name is Jay Koronik. I host the WHFR Journal on Fridays, and I help Ned here. But I just can't hold back from getting part of these exciting conversations. One issue with these instant notifications is that you don't want to give the community an idea that crime is rampant. I mean, there are things that happen every day, and most of it's relatively minor. And if you get every single incident, which is not the case with Nixle, is just a more important thing. I know there was a bank robbery in the last couple of weeks, and people were asked to identify a suspect if they happen to see them, and that's fine. But certainly a lot of things do happen, and not a lot. I mean, the trouble with the media in general, commercial media, is that they give us an impression that we should be more afraid than we might normally and not normally be, and that's not really the case. I mean, we have great police forces in Dearborn Heights, if I may commend both of you for your operations.
Thank you,
the response time is extremely low. I was at Fairlane Town Center, I think, before Christmas, and there was a robbery, and there was a small SWAT team that came in there, and three cop. I mean, it must have been within 10 minutes that they arrived, and I mean, they didn't need all of the firepower that they had, but they were ready and they were quick. Same thing when an incident, and we have very few here at Henry Ford Community College, so we have great response time, and I don't know if the public needs to know certainly about everything that's in the police blotter, because they might not want to go outside when, in fact, as Chief Haddad said, we're pretty safe communities, and people don't have anything to fear about. When incidents happen, they need to be informed. But it's a tough call as to what needs to be shared with the public on an ongoing basis, and what needs and what needs. I mean, obviously, people on one side will say, "I want to know about everything," and on the other side, I say we don't want to necessarily cause fear and panic when it's not an appropriate response.
Well, perception is worse than the reality sometimes. If I could jump in. We have perceptions about things that...
You know, you're both absolutely right. I think there's two things. The citizens have a right to know if there's a threat that's looming out there, and it'd be unconscionable for us not to let them know that. Secondly, I think that it's important to mention that in the last 6 or 7 high-profile cases we've had over the last 3 months, it's been citizen tips that turn these people in, right down to the bank robber yesterday on Telegraph there.
There was a bank robber.
I missed this. And unfortunately, Lee, I hate to say this, but he resided in the Heights, and that's not bad. That's not bad.
Was it in Dearborn or Dearborn Heights?
Dearborn. Well, the robbery was in Dearborn, and the gentleman resided, although he just came from down south in Dearborn Heights, but the right thing happened. A family member turned this person in. And we've repeatedly found people doing the right thing. And I think it goes to community awareness. It goes to the fact that they have a reasonable confidence in their police department that we're going to do the right things and not, you know, ignore their information, number one, and number two, not put them in harm's way when they give it to us. So right down to the shooting of Mr. Jay Shin at the hair supply place here a couple weeks ago, we got a good amount of phone calls identifying the two suspects in that case, right down to some of their past associates or family members. So that was not, it was welcomed, but it was not a surprise, because I think people do look to our departments with some degree of confidence that they can work with us. And that's what the Nexo program does. It just gives them one more avenue, as well as his corporal at
the Heights.
Do you
end up responding to the same things, whether it's in Dearborn or Dearborn Heights? Like, what's the difference where that bank is?
One
block away from the Dearborn Heights line. How does that work?
What will happen, Ned, is we respond. We get the primary call, the first call. We respond. But our dispatcher is in constant communication with Dearborn, and we monitor each other's radio traffic. And their officers working that end of the city will hear the run come out, or we will call Dearborn and say, hey, okay, we just had an incident. And, Dearborn, very good department, has a lot of officers on the streets. We need help, or some major incident happens, they're there.
Just
and we try to work together.
That brings me to this dispatcher question that we've been talking about in Dearborn Heights and Dearborn. That's something that we can do together sometime in the future, and there's something, your megahertz system is different than ours, and it seems you would think all the police departments in the whole region might be working off a similar system. It's almost like the fire department and the New York Police Department responding to September 11th, and nobody could talk to each other. It seems to me that's a simple thing that needs to be fixed, or you could either talk to each other, work together. How often do you find yourself? I see in terms of traffic, I see that a lot. I'll see a Dearborn Heights police car in Dearborn, or I'll see a Dearborn police car in my neighborhood chasing somebody down, and you'd see both of them. So obviously, some aspect of that is happening.
Ned,
just in traffic, or
the unfortunate part is that everything from fittings on fire hoses to radio transmission equipment, the interoperability in this country is atrocious, and to make sure that. Since 9/11 occurred, the government, the country, has put up standards that bring us into more compliance with one another, but there's a lot of huge startup cost up front. With our two dispatchers, somewhere the budget's going in a direction. We're going to have to consolidate services. That's unquestionable. But right now, for us to be able to consolidate our two dispatchers, and it doesn't matter who's dispatching the run. It doesn't matter to me.
Apparently that's a harmless area that's okay. The police chiefs or the departments don't care.
Well, no. It's somewhere we can save some cost, but somebody's going to have to pay for something, because we had 10,000 more police runs last year than the previous year.
Whoa.
So that put us up to close to 70,000. Don't quote me, but it's close to 70,000.
Chief, how does that reflect with you? That before that number gets away, are you doing
you know
the
what?
Same
I don't.
Percentage?
I don't have those totals present.
But what would you guess? Yours are
I'd say probably half. Most of the others
are rising too.
Are naturally, we're going up. I'd like to just make the comment with dispatch, though. We have to remember we need good, quality-trained people in there because they are the police officer's lifeline out there. When that officer is in trouble or needs backup, it's got to be the dispatcher that's got to listen to his transmission and gets more cars there.
Where are the dispatchers physically? In the station, the new building?
In our Justice Center, correct. Okay. They're in the
and
building
in Dearborn,
there.
They're
in our police station as well.
Okay.
Up on the second floor.
I see. And you have about how many of them?
In Dearborn, I have 18 for three
and
shifts.
And then what do we have?
We presently budgeted for 16.
I see.
If I can ask a question, what's the training? It has to be very good for those dispatchers, as you indicated. They almost need the background of a police officer and the legal issues involved with the way that they have to handle some of the calls coming in. So would we talk about that as a job?
Sure. Definitely.
Minimum requirements?
In our department in Dearborn Heights, the dispatchers have three functions. One is to dispatch the patrol units. Another dispatcher answers the incoming 911 calls. And a third person back there does the lean, which is a computer network, Secretary of State information, and dispatches for the fire. So we have to have three dispatchers at all time. With the first aid and 911 calls, they have to be certified in certain areas and first aid call taking. So there is a lot of training going. Naturally, it's shift work. So it's hard to get good dispatchers and keep them. And when you do get good dispatchers, you want to make sure they stay around. They're very important.
We're not paying them like we pay police officers, I don't think.
They're a little lower on the pay scale, but a lot of the pay, sure, starting level is low. And as you're with the department, the city for a while, pay escalates. So
Chief Haddad, what's your situation? The same thing?
We have basically, our responsibilities align just slightly different, but, the descriptions are fairly accurate. And we have, three or four on the shift to do those same services depending on what shift it is. And with dispatchers, you got to work in some relief time because they just can't stay on the horn for 8 hours, so there has to be some built-in relief that's regulated.
I'm just going to jump in and say that on the Journal show, where we have a wide range of opinions, and of course the opinions expressed on that show and our forum shows are not necessarily those at Henry Ford Community College, but in this whole push, and you may agree with me, although I know that police officers in general, you just want to do your job. You don't want to get involved in politics and so on. But I've said on the Journal, so I can say it for you, at least if you agree with me, you can stay silent if you want to, but is that police officers, fire department people, and teachers, these are some of the most important jobs in our society. They're public employees, folks, but we need the best people, and we need not just the incentives, but the benefit support, too, to keep these things going. They need to be paid well, commensurate with the nature of their important tasks. I don't know where the Dearborn budget's going in terms of funding public employees. We have minimum staffing. Everybody talks, the governor talks about shared sacrifice. Yeah, he can drop down to a dollar in salary. But these are some difficult times for salary levels. Maybe, Ned, I guess you were going to ask about that, or you as a councilman in Dearborn Heights may have to make some tough decisions, too, about salaries. Where does this stand? Ned, I'll throw it to you first, and then we'll let the police chiefs comment.
The thing, I was going to get to the question of budgets. I know in Dearborn Heights, our budget is $38 million in round change, some $37,944,000 through June the 30th. But we're not going to make that number. We're going to be something short. In fact, tonight we're going to find out what exactly the shortfall is. The mayor hasn't told us exactly, but we'll find out tonight. But I know that he said Dearborn is about $20 million short. Now, I was just talking to the treasurer today to try to understand what that means. It just means that we're in constant discussion with our unions in the city, trying to change our contracts, change our health care, try to get all the various units together on the same healthcare plan to try to save some money. And what happens is when it comes June 30th, and we're who knows, just a number off the top of my head, I would guess ours is $3 to $4 million short. It just means the taxes you're collecting for next year, there are funds, water funds, there are library funds, there are funds that you have to borrow from, but then you have to replace them somehow. So before the bargaining is finished for September 30th, we almost have to start again on July 1st and find out we're this much short again. What can we do? What services can be changed or cut? So that goes on.
Ned, let me just ask, it's usually contractually based. Is it annual, Chief Haddad, do you have annual contracts that have to be renewed with the police department personnel, for example?
The police department contracts are three-year contracts.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not annual.
And they're going to run through 2012 right now.
Okay.
You know, on what you said about the quality of applicants, I think that it's important to note two things. Number one, in the Dearborn Police, we have encouraged continuing education so that our officers are well-trained and continue to, you know, give the citizens the best service. And I'm proud to say that the vast majority of people that I've been fortunate to hire all had college degrees. So we have raised the bar there. And the next thing is, I know that law enforcement is very expensive, but when it comes time to making some sacrifice, I think we all have to do something to make sure the city survives, because if DPW doesn't get to plow the snow in the wintertime, or if you don't cut the grass in the summertime, if the fire department doesn't have a rescue to send out, you know, I think that we're all in this together. And true enough that police is one of the top core services in any society or any city, but I feel very responsible to keep the city as viable as possible, and the police may have to make some sacrifice to
Chief Gavin,
to make this
our
happen.
Contracts, how are they?
Our contracts, like Chief Haddad says, usually 3-4 year durations. And they, throughout the city, they expire at different years.
That's the problem. That's the
patrol
thing.
Contract now is probably good, I think, through, they extended theirs maybe 2016. I know the city's in negotiations with the AFSCME at this time. So the different unions in the city expire every year or 2 years apart.
Yeah.
Things are tight. We're working with the unions. As the administration, we're working with the unions in the mayor's office to try to get some cuts in there. In Dearborn Heights, we all went over to a new health care. We stayed with Blue Cross, but everyone went on to the same program. This way, all the employees of the city are on the same health care. City should see some substantial savings on that. And they're still working with the union heads to see what other, I don't want to say concessions, but cutbacks that we can all work together.
Well, we got it. We have our conversation is so interesting, we have to make our station identification. We're about 6 minutes late. But you are listening to The Heights News and Views, presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month as a part of WHFR's forum talk show format right here on WHFR at 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College. Now we'll get back to our guests, and we want to re-identify them as Police Chief Ronald Haddad of Dearborn and Police Chief Lee Gavin of Dearborn Heights. And what we're trying to find out is the similarities or dissimilarities between the two sister cities, and see if we make any sense out of our problems. Are they similar or not similar? And so far, they're pretty similar. The only thing I find interesting is that Dearborn Heights 18 dispatchers, and we have 16 in Dearborn Heights. There, it seems like there's a little bit of disparity in terms of population and size and physical size of the cities. But in any event,
let the chief talk about that.
Ned, maybe I could. Yeah. We're budgeted for 16, but we presently have 13.
Oh, okay.
So we are, you know, three short. And we have some agreements with the union in place now where we're going to try to get some part-time dispatchers.
Right. I didn't want to use that nasty word, part-time.
Pick them up from the other cities, but we're going to be looking out there for any people, dispatchers that have experience. The union's agreed to let us bring in some part-timers. That way we can fill the spots without having to pay the benefits.
One of the things that I learned in having the fire department take me on a trip at their training institute way out in Troy, I think it was. The fire department really, in terms of rescue, they do a lot more of that than they do putting out fires. They're running their ambulances like a private little business that's going constantly.
You know,
how
Ned,
do you communicate? If you get the 911, how do they get that message? They get it from you?
They get it from us. Our dispatcher will answer the call, incoming 911 call. And then they forward it up to the fire headquarters, and then they'll respond to the rescue run, the accident, the house fire.
Is that the same for you,
Chief? It works the same way in Dearborn.
So, I mean, they're quite little busy guys.
I'm not a fire expert, a little bit more experience here in the police, but, firemen, they work hard. A little different type of work.
I went through their thing. I told them I wouldn't do this job for twice the money.
Ned, I've been hearing this from you for the last 6 months, so we got to make sure we get you out in the police car.
That's right. I'm waiting for the new
maybe
police
get
car.
You in a little pursuit. Or
no, I want the new cars when they come.
The new cars, okay.
Andy, when are they coming, the new cars? 24 of them?
They're on their way in now. We just got to pay the bills for them, and they're waiting. We're waiting to pick them up, but... Like I said, I've heard you talk about those firemen for the last 6 months, so we got to get you into some police
really
situations here.
You know, what really surprised me was the firemen and policemen most of them don't live in the cities anymore. That was a big surprise to me.
You know, and Ned, and I think Chief Haddad maybe will make a little comment on it too, but in the old days when we got hired by the respective cities, you lived in that city. Mm-hmm. I personally think you took more interest in the city. You lived there. Even on your off-duty time, you were involved in the city. Now, years ago, they passed a law where you don't have to reside in the community you work in. So, you know what? That's just sign of the times. But personally, I think when you live in a community or live close, you take a little more involvement. Chief Haddad?
Yeah, I fully agree. You know, I lived in Detroit my entire adult life, and even when they changed the residency rule, I did not leave because I just felt compelled to be there, and now I've moved to Dearborn. I think from a selfish point of view, if you had all the employees that worked here, living here, we'd have many more responsible households. I'm not necessarily convinced, however, that a resident will make a better police officer. I think it's a matter of... the commitment of the individual, their training. The other side of the coin, somebody that doesn't live in a city can be equally a good servant of the people, but certainly there's pluses for a resident who is a good worker as well. So,
what is the compensation for a beginning police officer? Difference? Is it standard in Dearborn Heights?
You know, every city has a different pay scale, but starting pay... I haven't checked recently, but they're all in the average $30,000 to $35,000, and then there's
steps.
Is
yours is about something like that?
It's maybe a little bit higher than that, but you know the bigger question, Ned, is what does a new officer cost the city? In Dearborn, for example, a new officer cost us $116,000 annually with legacy and benefits and other costs. In addition to their
the average person doesn't really think about that. But so in terms of compensation, what is it? Is there a maximum? Like a school teacher reaches a certain number, right, Jay? What is it with police officers? Is there a 20 years?
Or? Oh, yeah. They can get up to $60,000 to $65,000, a senior corporal, you know.
And how about
and that's
you,
base
Chief?
Pay.
Same with Dearborn Heights. You know, so top pay's got to be, I'd say, mid-50s, and then with some longevity or a few contractual issues, like Chief Haddad says, you know, mid-60s, depending on overtime, too. Some officers work more
with
overtime.
With the fire department, I happened to look at that. I think it was 59-something. Yeah. It was like $60,000. Now, the other problem is the pensions. How does your pension system work in Dearborn, Chief? And then, Chief Gavin, I mean, is it... Is it years? You have to be 20 years, a certain number?
Yeah, you have to. You have to reach a certain number of years and be of a certain age. And it's important to note here that prior to my arrival, they had a two-tier system of paying people, and that the mayor elected to put about 45 of his youngest hirees back into the pension system. So, you know, that was a bold step, but also it just shows the commitment. I'm sure he would not have gotten an award at the Harvard School of Business for doing that, because the trend is not to give them these benefits. But he chose, for the quality of the applicant, to make sure that there's not a great disparaging difference in cost. And for
so
us,
you have new hires that don't have pensions?
There was approximately 40 of them, but they've all been restored into the pension system now. So I'm very grateful for the mayor, because that allows us to keep that applicant. It allows us to demand that we get a better applicant. And, you know, I could be working next to Lee, and I could be making more money than him, and that would be grossly unfair. You know, so those things were taken care of prior.
So what's your formula in Dearborn? Then I'll ask Chief Gavin the same. Is it certain age and so many years?
Yeah, certain age. They have to have at least 20 years of service, okay. And I think it's 45 years old.
So what's your number, 65, 20, and 45, and then you can retire?
Yeah, you do 25 years irrespective of your age. You're going to be at least 46 years old, because you typically hire them at 21. You can collect your pension the day you walk out of the door with a 25-year pension. And historically, in Dearborn, the trend has been it's 25 and out.
So what do you get, 50% of your salary, 100% of your salary, 75%?
It's probably roughly somewhere between 50 and 75, depending on how many years and your rank. And
how does that go with you, Chief?
Dearborn Heights, our pension is based on, we have a multiplier of 2.8% per year. So if you work your 25 years, comes up to
almost, you have to be 25 years.
You got to be 25 years. There are some agreements on letters of understanding with the union that they can purchase some prior military time or police experience time. They have to pay X amount for that.
Is that 5% of what the base salary is what it is for some people?
No, I'm not aware of that, really. You know what the city charges, but you have to pay X amount to buy those years, and then you can retire. We used to have a 50-year age limit; had to be 50 years of age. That's been waived. So, like Chief Headed says, most officers start 21. Your 25 years put you up near 46 years of age. A lot of guys,
you can retire at somewhere between 50 and 75 for 70%.
70%, you know, after your 25 years. If you stay a little later, if in our department from year 25 to year 30, you get an extra 1.5% per year, which for those 5 years would be 7.5%. So the maximum pension you could leave percentage-wise in our city would be 82.5% of your salary.
That multiplier, you multiply times the number of years you have, right?
Right.
And then you the extra, that's how you get it to
that's
be
how
50%.
Right, 2.8% a year, and then there's a...
Jay, how does that compare with the school teachers that you...
Well, it's about the same. I was saying that the pension plans for the police have to be done locally, individually. The cities have to set up the system and investment and insurance system, and that's one of the major cost problems for the city. Teachers like Henry Ford Community College, public education, it goes to the state of Michigan, and hopefully it's you know, adequately funded, but at least it's a large pool. You know, that sometimes reduces cost. You know, the proposal by Andy Dillon, when he was representing this area and was House Majority Leader, was to combine teacher, police, and fire, both I think pensions and insurance, but especially health insurance anyway, into one pool. But it would wind up actually cutting into the benefits, and we don't know what he's going to propose with him now as state treasurer and sort of part of the Snyder administration. That's a real question. I know that many local area mayors and city councils no names, of course, that I want to give, but off the record they've told me that they hope that that plan is reintroduced to save the city's costs. Why the pension costs are going up so much is not clear to me. I know why health insurance is going up, but there's apparently the cities are under the gun from some statisticians who have to make legal recommendations on how much money has to be in the pension fund for the sake of future payoffs.
They call them actuarians.
And you have to follow what they say, but they're in difficult economic times, their recommendations go way up for the amount of money that has to come in. And I don't know what the answers are there. It's certainly a problem for the cities. I know Mayor O'Reilly, for example, has said publicly that, as an aside to one of his economic presentations in the last couple of months, is that he'd almost like to see separate millage that people would vote on to guarantee these kinds of contributions, just to take the burden of decisions off the councils and the mayors in the future. But I'm not sure that millages based on property taxes are the way to go. So I don't know the police chiefs have been always in the past wonderful in staying out of politics, but unfortunately, I'm sure you have recommendations to your mayors, as part of the process. If there's any good answers, I don't know what they are, but it's really a budget issue that needs everybody to come up with some solutions.
What's happening now is now you can buy a house for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. You couldn't hear the numbers like that. What do you think that does to the tax rate? Yeah. It's bringing it down. It's less money coming in, and something has to be done. The problem, there's a perception. I hear from union friends of mine that they think the problem in the auto industry was they were paying us too much. And if you're on the bargaining team with the General Motors or Ford, you get to find out that wasn't the big number. So I don't know who to believe. The question is, there's a perception out there that public employees, their benefits and their salaries are higher than the private employees, and the private employee, whatever, we have a court case to determine whose accusations are right. One thing remains the truth. The public, that subject that lives in private enterprise and sees that he's not getting raises and he doesn't have a union and he's losing his health benefits and he has to pay his taxes, is not going to stand long for finding the public employees of any ilk, however that is, having pensions and they're increasing and their salaries are going up. Something is going to reach a point where someone is going to say, we can't pay for this anymore, and God knows how that's going to be worked out. I certainly don't know the answer. I think Mr. Dillon's idea made a lot of sense, and of course it didn't help him get nominated
Didn't hurt him getting a new job since he was term limited before.
Yeah, yeah, he did the right thing. He's pretty much like Mr. Snyder.
In a non-political way, let's see if Chief Haddad has any ideas about the pension questions for the future.
No, I just I think it's a highly complex issue. Certainly, I could be an advocate for law enforcement, saying that where we differ from many other services or jobs, we work 365 days a year and around the clock. Oftentimes we ask our men and women to put themselves at great peril to do their jobs. It is a high-risk business. I think the average lifespan after retirement nationally is like 7 years. We have more than our fair share of mental illness, alcoholism, hypertension, heart problems, etc., in our profession. So I would be a very strong advocate for what we have. But having said that, I also recognize we can't do business as we have in the past, and we'll have to work out a better way to do it.
I'd like to, Ned, just to be fair, let Chief Gavin either echo, or maybe you have ideas. How are you dealing with this in Dearborn Heights?
I agree with Chief Haddad there in regards to pensions with the officers. like the chief said, our officers are out there 24 hours a day. They're doing stuff that the normal citizen doesn't want to do, and they call upon us to do it. The type of violence that we see. I'm not saying every day the officers are going through all these incidents, you know, these type of situations, but on the majority of the time they are. They're working the holidays. They're working Christmas Day. So in return with the pensions, it's only fair that they get a, you know, a fair pension for the time and effort that they put in to protect our community here. In Dearborn Heights with our pension, our police and fire pension is supported by a millage. And then naturally the other union, the AFSCME, has a general government pension. So I'm not an expert on these pensions, but the way they're financed through the city, through millage, this and that. In regards to pay with our officers, it's probably been the last 4 or 5 years that nobody I know of in the police department has got any pay raises, I believe also with the fire department. So, like Chief Head had said, we have to change the way we've done things for years. We all have to tighten our belts and be a little more fiscally responsive. And I think we're all heading in the right direction. You know, with Dearborn, again, we have a close ties. If I have any issues, I can call Chief Ron as a friend and say, hey, I got this issue. Can you help me out? And he'd be there in a second for me. And so two cities like this, we try to work close. And besides, you know, being partners in law enforcement, we're friends, and we try to solve things together.
I have a question. I have a question about that has to do with pensions, is this Act 345, which is a little bit of a mystery. Jay, I think the point about it is something that's automatic that came about in 1937, and its costs don't show up. It's not like a school millage. It doesn't show up. The millage is automatically, and we have Rose in Dearborn Heights that comes to meetings every once in a while, and the last time before I was on the council threatened that she was going to get her signatures and bring this issue to
the taxpayer union person.
Yes. Citizens
Rose.
Against taxpayers. And,
right.
I don't know that she's not wrong. It's something that has to be talked about. And this DROP program, can anybody can add something to that from your point of view, what the public understands?
Just really quickly here in Dearborn Heights, what the DROP program is, when you reach retirement age, the DROP program is you keep your employment with the city so you continue getting your salary, but you start collecting your pension. Your pension's remaining in the general pension, in the police pension fund, and how the city is making money or saving their money in fact is the health care at that time is paid out of the pension. So the city, right now I think we have 20, 25 employees in a DROP program, meaning those 20, 25 employees, their health care is being paid for out of the pension. So that's saving the city's money. And in return, they're keeping the experienced officers, supervisors, administrators around.
And they still collect the pension?
Collect your pension.
So you work and collect the pension at the
sure.
same time. I see.
Sure.
But the health insurance costs are huge, so that's quite a savings.
Yeah. Yes.
$10,000, $15,000 a person or more.
Per person.
You
know.
And everybody thinks the health saving, the health costs going up have something to do with the recent health care plan.
Mm-hmm.
Health care has been rising, and the question is you can't stop it from rising. Anyway, a simple question before we end. How many vehicles do we have in Dearborn? Do you know?
Well, the last time I checked, I think that all of our vehicles combined, we have, I think, 46. And please forgive me if we check and I'm off by a few. But I think with our
could lose track of a couple.
Yeah, our bomb trucks and our animal control vehicles and our
that was my next question.
Yeah,
which one of them
scout
are
cars and right. our undercover vehicles? I think about 46. Something in the neighborhood of 46.
And of the 46, you have several specialty vehicles, which I wasn't really aware of. And they are, and identify them?
No.
A bomb truck.
Oh, we do have a bomb truck. We do have a SWAT truck where we're fully equipped.
You have something with dogs, too.
Yeah, we have animal control vehicles.
Right.
But we have other special vehicles that we're just not going to disclose today.
Okay. Well, you got a gas station too that goes along with it, or you do business at one of the stations?
No, we're very fortunate. We have a gas pump outside the building, and yes, we're paying more money for gas these days, which exasperates the budget woes, but yeah, we're fortunate that way. It's convenient. It's right there at the garage. And
Chief, how about you? How many vehicles do we have?
You know, we just ordered a new fleet of cars. We just got 18 new Crown Vics, along with our other vehicles. We're probably up near 30 cars. Chief Headhead says, you have a dump truck.
Do you still keep all the old ones? I thought you'd get rid of them.
What we usually do is send them up to City Hall and give them to the building department. So make use of them, and the ordinance officers drive them. They don't put the wear and tear on them as, you know, the officers out there on the streets.
Well, one thing is for sure, I really thank the both of you for coming. And I know Jay enjoyed our program, and we hope our listeners did as well. And I hope you all learned something, because my purpose is to educate and inform the public on issues of interest to them and to me, of course.
And I'd just like to say, Ned, in before we play the theme, of course, thank you to the two police chiefs of our communities here. The public should constantly realize that they need this partnership with the police every day. They should see police as friends. Believe it or not, I still talk to some students. They don't live in Dearborn Heights, but they don't want to relate to the police. They don't want to participate. They have that idea about snitching or whatever. And it, you know, the police and the fire people are there to help us. And in this community, they are just above board fair and responsive. And so I thank both of you and your teams, as I did earlier, for your service. And thank you, Ned, Dearborn Heights councilperson, for your leading the discussion today.
My pleasure.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and let me explain what you've been listening to. It's the Dearborn Heights News and Views, coming to a close for today. It's a live talk show program. It's part of the WHFR Forum program every Tuesday from 1 to 2 o'clock. It's presented, this show is presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month, and the next show is coming up on May 31st, 2011. It's devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. So thank you for listening today. 89.3 FM, Dearborn, the station making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College. You can listen again to this and all of our other archive forum programs on the internet by going to the WHFR.FM website and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear again. Thank you very much for listening to Heights News and Views today, WHFR.FM.